I straightened all the way. I didn't feel remotely ready for another day in the ring. Someone had brought us a mushy breakfast. I bit back another groan as I picked up both trays from the door and brought them to the center of the room. Adonis was dressing, and I sat heavily. "You know you snore?" he asked. Awkward did not begin to explain the close quarters. I ate without responding and willed my body to stop aching quite so much. "You ready for today?" I continued to ignore him, not in the mood for shape-shifting grotesques or their annoying CISA chief personas. "Not talking." Was he amused? I didn't dare acknowledge him with a look. We ate, and he pulled out the first aid kit. I watched for a split second as he rolled up a sleeve and prepared to bandage the nasty-looking wound on his arm. "I can do that," I said. He said nothing about me breaking my silence, but held out the bandage. I shifted forward and took it. I wrapped his forearm carefully, how Heracles taught me. When finished, I sat back and admired the work briefly. "Your guardian taught you well," Adonis said. "Yep." I looked at him for the first time this morning. It was true. I had already begun to reap the rewards of his training. And yet, my parents. Today, after some good rest, I was starting to think differently about the issue I brushed off yesterday. I was good at denying things I didn't want to deal with, or emotional issues, because I'd been taught by example to ignore feelings in favor of action. Was that because Heracles himself didn't know how to deal with what he'd done? Lost in dark thought, I was gazing into Adonis's eyes. Heat warmed my cheeks. He was too enigmatic for me to begin to guess if he knew what I was thinking. "You raised my forest." I needed the reminder that the man before me was no better than the man Heracles had been. I was kind of afraid of learning to trust someone, to find their secrets unbearable. And Adonis struck me as someone who had a lot to hide. "I did. No better way to drive out a herd of deer than to take their home away. I saw you at the lake. I gave away the location, didn't I?" He nodded. "I can sense more than how you feel. I can sense where you are when the red cord is off." "That's creepy." Adonis wasn't the kind of man to offer condolences or sympathy, but at least he wasn't messing with me. In fact, he'd been brutally honest when we spoke last night. I didn't know what to think about the people around me or what I was supposed to be doing. I wasn't about to trust him. If my own guardian, who I spent 12 years treating as a father, had a past that horrified me, what had this creature done? "I will protect you," he said quietly. "I make few promises in life, but this is one." I'm not sure I believe him. I sensed he felt my turmoil. My body probably gave me away, and I rolled my shoulders to loosen the tension between them. "I'm ready." I stood and stretched back. "You think the monster will be bigger today?" "Much. And we'll know how mad the Supreme Priest still is." 15 minutes later, we found out. "What in Hades is that?" I whispered, staring through the gate into the arena at the monster facing off with no less than 8 men armed with lances, swords, knives, and axes. "A sign the Supreme Priest isn't going to forgive me this time." I searched his face. He was tense, but this was different than the man ready for battle. This was the tension of a man who was worried. "I'm sorry," I murmured. "For what?" He appeared genuinely curious. "For you being punished because of me. Why would you apologize for someone else making a decision about his life?" "Because I'm a nice person, you asshole," I sighed. "Why are you so difficult?" He studied me, the half-smile back. It never quite reached his beautiful eyes. "Obviously, I enjoy baiting you. I hadn't really found the side of him capable of being truly human yet. I rolled my eyes and tested the swords. My back was quaking, my strength half what it was yesterday. I went through several slow exercises. "Thank you," he said softly. "For what?" I grumbled. "For caring about my fate. No one I can remember ever has." My anger crumbled. Then he said something like this, or rescued me, or defied his boss, a member of the Triumvirate, and ended up in a death match with a monster. I began to suspect he simply didn't know how to be human, because he was good at it when he tried. "That was a very good human response," I told him. "People are supposed to care for one another. They aren't supposed to send their friends to face monsters." "This is foreign to me." I glanced at him to ensure he wasn't baiting me again. To my surprise, the self-admitted butcher of who knew how many people was serious. "You've never loved anyone? Been loved?" "Only you," I flushed. "As a child, when you loved Mismatch," he added with a glimmer of amusement in his eyes. "That is all I know of love. Friends." How did he do this? How could I want as far away from him as possible one moment, and to hug him the next and assure a mass murderer that he too deserved to be loved? "You never had a chance to be a real human, did you?" I managed. "Why does that make you want to cry?" "Stop with the body reading." I sighed and swallowed the tightness of my throat. "Because you might make a good human if you were given the chance to learn. You can be very kind, very thoughtful. And yet my kindness makes you tense. Yeah, your bluntness too. Thank you." "You're welcome," I said. "Now we just need to teach you some eating manners and you'll be set. And get you laid so you stop tensing up whenever I touch you." I pushed him. This time his smile was real. It was dazzling, more beautiful than his eyes, and revealed dimples in his cheeks. "Can you manipulate its ribbons?" he asked. I blinked out of my surprise, grateful to focus on something outside of the two of us, even if it was the largest monster I'd ever seen. The crowd was already twice as loud as yesterday when we'd won. People were on their feet, cheering on the creature shredding men two at a time in the arena before us. The Typhon possessed four ribbons. I stepped forward and lifted a hand. Where I was able to grip the ribbons of anyone or anything, I couldn't quite grasp these. Whenever I tried, they shifted, just out of reach. "This is weird. It's got some sort of defense mechanism."
"It's a Typhon. It's supposed to be buried beneath a mountain. It wouldn't surprise me to discover he's under the protection of some god or other."
"Looks like he got out," I said, distracted. "Zeus alone was able to subdue him." My hand dropped and I faced him. "You can't be serious." Adonis said nothing, and my eyes returned to the arena. I believed him. The massive monster had the upper body of a man and the lower body of an octopus, except each tentacle was a snake with fangs that exceeded the size of my hand. The crowd burst into a frenzy. The beast was tearing through the men as if they were standing still and not hacking at the snake heads darting towards them. What the snakes didn't sever in two, the creature's double-headed axe did. I had never seen men die. In my dream or memory was one thing, but here, watching their blood spray into the air and coat the ground, hearing the crowd roar louder the more blood was shed. I felt a little ill. It had never occurred to me to imagine what the inside of a human body looked like, and I was disgusted to see it didn't look much different than beef.
"I think I want to be a vegetarian," I whispered,
not entirely certain how to handle the sight.
"You've never seen a man die?"
"No."
definitely never seen one torn in two. It's a quick death. There are many worse ways to die.
You would know, wouldn't you?
I meant the words to be said too quiet for him to hear, but they came out normal.
And it's my fault you do know.
Your fault? I felt his eyes on me.
I brought you to life.
I unleashed whatever you did. Whatever you are. You make it sound as if I'm like this thing.
He lifted his chin towards the arena.
I don't know what you are. I've heard a few things about what Sisa does to people, I replied. Everyone is terrified of you in particular. Nico can't be trusted with his dick. I laughed, startled by the warm anger.
You guys don't get along.
But even Dozy said you were dangerous.
Dangerous, yes. A monster? No.
You said you were as bad as everyone says. And I'm not about to trust you of all people after Heracles.
Ah, there is something.
I didn't mean to say it aloud. He was far too curious about the relationship between Heracles and me. I didn't understand exactly why, and prayed it wasn't because he knew something else about Heracles that would hurt me worse.
What is it?
Adonis asked, nudging me in the side with his elbow. So you can't read minds. Thank the gods.
Is there more you don't want to share?
There's a shit ton that's not your business, I snapped, glaring at him. Why do you think anything about me is? I was almost relieved that the gate chose that moment to open. Amusement at my outburst glowed deep in his eyes.
You've been needling me since we met. I'm returning the favor.
I haven't needled you, I retorted. And I know that's not true. You may be able to feel what I do, but some of that carries over to me. I knew you were lying when you said this wasn't personal, and I know you're lying now. You want something from me, Adonis.
Maybe.
He drew both swords.
Or maybe there aren't many people I'm interested in, Alessandra. You're strong, beautiful, and unique. You're destined for things you can't begin to imagine.
You intrigue me. No more honesty. I preferred it when you barely said two words to me.
The Typhon awaits.
He started into the arena. I was about to demand to know his plan when it hit me what he'd said. Beautiful. The most incredible, yet freaky man I'd ever met thought I was pretty. The knowledge made my insides warm and fluttery. And more adrenaline fed into my bloodstream. Adonis was definitely on a different scale than the silly boys I used to lure from the campground into the forest. The two were on opposite ends of the man spectrum. If we weren't about to die horribly at the hands of a monster...
Focus, Alessandra.
It didn't feel like a lie from him, but I sensed he wasn't telling me the full truth either. I followed into the arena. Adonis waited for me to near before speaking again.
He's vulnerable from the waist up, like any human. We're going to try to behead the snakes one by one. And, if we're lucky, you'll figure out how to crush him with magic before he pulverizes us.
This is a terrible plan, I muttered and joined him. My eyes went to an arm and head that had landed on this side of the ring, before finding the pyramid of bloodied heads on one side. The creature had killed dozens here today. For a long moment, I couldn't look away, and my stomach churned. Hey, I blinked at Adonis's quiet voice and looked up at him. Heracles trained you well. You need some polishing, and it starts with focus. Eyes there. He pointed his sword at the creature headed towards us. Never take them off your opponent.
Okay.
Not that staring down the monster was better than seeing the pile of heads. I stretched out a hand and tried again to grasp his ribbons. They remained evasive. He's going to swing the axe. We'll duck. And strike at the same time at the head closest to us. Then bolt, Use that speed of yours to get clear of the head beside it. How do you know he's going to swing? I studied the monster. It was almost upon us, and I was fighting the urge to run. Instinct. Adonis stepped a meter away, eyes trained on the target. Wait until I say to move.
I trust you. For now.
It wasn't possible to fight for our survival at his side and not trust him, even if my faith in him didn't extend outside the arena. Ready to duck on three. The hissing snakeheads were my size, with long tongues and fangs that were far too close for my comfort. But I didn't move. If I knew one thing about Adonis, it was that he had a sixth sense when it came to predicting his opponent. Two. A tongue nearly reached me. The giant swung his axe back. One. The massive axe swung over our heads. At the same time, the snake nearest us darted forward. I stumbled to the side, not expecting its speed. It shrieked suddenly, and I saw Adonis raising his swords for a second strike. I hurried forward and joined him. The writhing snake body knocked me off my feet, and I vaulted back up, all too aware of the neighboring snakehead that was now trained on me. "Drop and roll!" Adonis shouted. I obeyed. I wasn't about to doubt him when my life was in his hands. The neighboring snake snapped into the air above my head, then followed me, digging its fangs into the ground by my thigh as I rolled. The monster bellowed in pain and anger, and I saw the axe start to drop again. With no more momentum to roll, I launched to my feet and ducked a swinging snake head before diving out of the range of the axe. Back on my feet, I saw Adonis had been driven off as well, one of his swords still stuck in the half-severed head of a snake. He used hand signals Heracles taught me, and I nodded to show I understood. But I definitely didn't agree. His plan was to scale the wounded head in order to get to the vulnerable body of the monster. He drew the third short sword he had at his back. The monster charged at me. Instincts warned me against getting stuck in the corner behind me, and I darted to the side. Slashing, weaving, hacking. The dangerous dance was too fast for me to track my movements or the monster's. I didn't have a chance to think about survival. I just reacted. Left! Adonis's voice reached me through the haze of movement. I obeyed and ended up knocked to the ground by a snakehead rather than eaten. I rolled, feeling one tooth graze my arm, and whipped my swords up blindly. I stabbed one head through the mouth. Adonis was suddenly there, and he smashed both his weapons down on the creature's neck. This time, the head fell lifeless next to me. I didn't have a chance to catch my breath. He stepped between me and the next attacking head to give me time to bound to my feet. "Axe!" I cried. We both dove to the ground and hopped up again quickly. Adonis snatched me around the waist and whirled twice before his movement stopped, putting enough space between us and the beast for us to breathe. "Thanks," I gasped. We stood for a brief moment, leaning against one another to recover. His scent was as soothing as talking to him was not. "They grow back," he said. I followed his gaze. The first head had completely healed despite the sword in its neck. "That's impossible." The second had healed over, but not yet grown back. The axe fell towards us once more. We dived away from one another and were quickly back on our feet. "Stay on your feet," Adonis called, and then bolted. I wanted to watch. His speed was incredible, but a snakehead darted my way, and I began the deadly dance again. I smashed my sword into the fangs, and it withdrew. The chink in the monster's defenses gave me more breathing room for sure, and I played it to my advantage. I moved with the monster, keeping the not-yet-regrown head to my weak left, while battling the nearest snake and glancing upwards towards Adonis. He wasn't getting very far. The snake heads could move up as well as out and away, and he was struggling to climb past the monster's belt. As if fed up with him, the creature snatched him and held him up and away with a huge hand. He began to squeeze. I saw the grimace of pain cross Adonis's face. For the first time, I began to think we might not make it out of here. All of Adonis's speed and strength, all my training, wasn't going to defeat something like this. The sight of him in pain, trapped, helpless. Well, not helpless. He plunged one sword through the hand of the monster. But I knew he was hurting, and I involuntarily ached for him. Heracles killed my parents before adopting me. Adonis tried to rescue me before turning into a mass murderer. No matter what I felt for either, one truth melted out of my confused emotions. I'd never let either of them die. Deflecting the lunge of the snakehead nearest me, I dropped one sword and reached for the ribbons around the creature. They evaded me, but I had a plan. I dropped the second sword and ducked a swipe with the axe. This time, when I reached for the ribbons, my other hand hovered close enough to catch them when they darted. Adonis gave a roar of pain. The monster shook him hard. Two snakeheads were headed my direction, and I had no weapons within reach. Not understanding how to disarm my opponent, I closed my fist around the ribbons, crushed them with my hand, and yanked them all towards me. The typhon vanished. Adonis fell 10 meters out of the air and landed in a still heap, his ribbons agitated and at least 2 jagged. The crowd fell silent. I looked down at the jumbled ribbons in my hand. Afraid to release them to the world in case a new typhon formed, I did what I had done with my green ribbon and pressed them against my thigh. They disappeared. I uncurled my hand hesitantly. The ribbons were gone. Mnemosyne had said I was born with the power to create and destroy. I just proved her right, and it felt icky, like watching the typhon pulverize the men it fought before us. People were beginning to whisper, then talk, then boo. Furious, they were angry we survived. I looked up, and my anger faded. It wasn't us they were booing. Soldiers in urban camouflage had begun to pour into the grandstands of the arena. Boos turned to cries for people to flee before the military captured them. I stood, breathless, and made my way to Adonis, dropping to my knees beside him. He wasn't moving. Distracted by the invasion, I nonetheless did as he had instructed and focused on the challenge at hand. I smoothed out his ribbons with some effort, still not certain how or why this worked, and then untangled the one that was knotted. The gate nearest us rolled open, but I ignored it, continuing to work until I was satisfied the ribbons were as they should have been. "Just hope you're not dented like the cup," I whispered. I didn't need to see the soldiers pouring in to know they were there. "Adonis, you gotta wake up." He did so slowly and shook his head, pushing himself up. His gaze settled past me on the soldiers. "Damn, here I was hoping Adonis would die." Nico's voice made me want to scream. "Good job, kid." I twisted to see him and then pushed to my feet, exhausted. Adonis caught my arm, and instead of turning to give Nico an earful, I looked into his gorgeous eyes. "Your old boss wants to see you, Adonis," Nico said. "Might be willing to forgive you after the money he won on this round." My eyes widened. "No," I whispered fiercely to Adonis. "You can't go back to what you were." "Remember what I said," Adonis said, gazing down at me. "That I'm beautiful?" As soon as I heard the words, I knew they were so very wrong. "I'll protect you." Adonis was amused, no matter what you perceive to be going on. "Adonis, this isn't..." Ignoring me, he released me and walked past me towards Nico. Been a pleasure, Nico, he said. Looks like he won't be killing me today. I turned, fuming and confused, to see the two men staring one another down. Not today, Nico agreed. Leave, before I forget my boss's orders to make sure you make it back alive. Adonis slid away, without bothering to look at me again, and disappeared into the depths of the gate. I watched him go, stung, and nowhere near trusting him enough to place any amount of money on a bet he was serious about helping me. It made no sense that his betrayal hurt me as deeply as Heracles's, but it did. Good show, kid, Nico said to me. Time to meet the Supreme Magistrate. I glared at him. I was in no mood to meet anyone. I had no forest to return to, no Heracles to comfort me, no choices of my own to make. The military had cleared out most of the grandstands, and the other exit was blocked by a line of them. Go on, Nico nodded his head towards the nearby gate. Disliking him more every time we met, I also had nowhere else to go, and moved forward reluctantly. This isn't how it's supposed to go. Adonis was supposed to stay with me, and we were going to leave this place. Thus far, no part of the real world lived up to my expectations. I was starting to understand why Heracles was so insistent I not leave the forest before I was ready. What he failed to understand was that nothing could prepare someone for a life like this. Nico caught my arm as I passed. A sharp sting pierced my forearm. Ouch! Immediately, the ribbons around everyone vanished. I'm not taking any chances, he said, and released me. In his other hand was a small gun like the one Marty had used to give me a biotag. I looked down at the red dot of blood above an equally red something he put under my skin. We create a solution out of one of your cords, easier than a bracelet. Not something you can readily remove, either. I hate you, Nico. But I love you, Alessandra, he said, amused. You know what kind of a bonus you earned me? I marched away angrily, dreading where they'd take me. A prison? A torture chamber? To feed me to another monster? My mind was whirling with horrible thoughts, but it was the vision of Adonis walking away from me that was the worst. Chapter 16. An alliance with a powerful person is never safe. Phaedrus. Maybe I died and went to Thanatos's waiting room. I stood in the middle of the open foyer of a Greek-style villa of endless white marble. Airy, open, spacious, serene. Even Adonis's apartment wasn't as beautiful as this place. A waterfall laughed from somewhere deeper in the house, and the scent of roses and other flowers floated through open windows from a garden courtyard. A crystal chandelier was overhead, and the decor was simple, sleek, and expensive, if I had to guess. Two servants stood in traditional white robes, a male and female, with their eyes straight ahead of them and their poses still enough to resemble the statues that dotted the interior. Dressed in a dusty, bloody, sweaty black Sisa uniform, and nowhere near fitting into the place, I shifted back onto the plush rug so as not to mar the pristine white marble flooring with the blood of my reopened back wound. Nico's escorts remained at the door of the villa. It pleases you? I turned at the unfamiliar voice. The distinguished man in his 40s was well-dressed in a suit, clean-shaven, and radiating a similar level of confidence bordering on arrogance that Adonis did. With dark eyes and hair, he looked familiar, though I was too tired and wary to place him. I shrugged in response. He smiled politely, the kind of smile that was reflexive rather than sincere. No other part of his facade changed with the token gesture, and his eyes remained cold. "This is yours," he stated. He held nothing in his hands, and he didn't point at anything either.
"What is mine?" I asked cautiously.
"The villa. It belongs to the Oracle."
"I don't understand."
"This is your new home," he said again without blinking. It took some negotiating with a furious Supreme Priest, but Nico finally managed to bring you where you belong.
"You're seeing..."
I looked at my surroundings anew. Adonis's men had claimed the Oracle was wealthy. It wasn't really clicking this meant I was wealthy.
"Yes. Who are you?" I asked.
"Among others, I'm known as the Right Honorable Supreme Magistrate. Among my equals, of which you are one, I'm simply called Cleon."
"Magistrate."
Nico's boss. I'd seen this man on the television, though he looked a little different in real life. Maybe because the feed we received in the forest was always somewhat fuzzy. It took me a moment to move past my surprise that the man at the top of the food chain was addressing me. What did one do when meeting such a person?
"Oh," I kicked myself for the stupid response. "Sorry, I didn't recognize you."
"I understand from Nico, your upbringing was... sheltered." I feel like I was raised on another planet. This time, his smile was genuine, or trying to be. He quickly suppressed the warm amusement in his gaze. "I'll save the tour for later. I've called for a physician to attend you. The wound on your back appears deep."
"Doesn't hurt," I murmured.
"What tour?" "I will leave you to explore your home on your own. If you need anything, ask your servants. But the tour I speak of the grounds." I started to smile. I was the one he used to get stuck with kitchen duty and maintenance of the school because I was too wild. I was the school's sole servant. I had never dreamed of having my own servants. "You may want to be more appropriately attired." I smiled and I knew it. I wasn't sure I cared. For a man with immense power and influence, he was being... nice. Which wasn't good. People weren't nice. If I was learning anything about life, it was this. Yet something was subtly pleasant about this man. I innately knew his suggestions were gently disguised orders. And I didn't really mind. It was a first for me not to mind being told what to do. "You're a good politician, aren't you?" "I am adept at my position, yes." I didn't roll my eyes, but wanted to.
"You're sure this... place is mine?" I asked, puzzled by the notion.
I left the forest with nothing but my knife, the clothes on my back, and the gem mismatch gave me as a child. I had never really had possessions, never been concerned about obtaining them.
"The Oracle's trust falls to her successor upon discovery."
"Where is the other Oracle?"
"She works with the gods. Once you assume the mantle of your position, you no longer need such luxuries from humans when you have the gods to provide for you."
He made sense. To a point. I still felt like everyone around me had a huge secret, and no one was willing to share it.
"I'll wait for you," he offered.
"After the tour, a soiree is planned to begin introducing you to prominent members of the social strata in which you now belong."
Soiree? Strata? His use of pretty words made me feel more backwards than I already was. I wanted a tour, particularly of this villa that I allegedly owned, but I also wanted some space. Some time to clear my head of the monsters and almost dying. Of Adonis abandoning me, and Nico dragging me here. I was back where I was when I met Adonis. Struggling to understand a stranger's game, and feeling ill-prepared to handle something that didn't involve direct confrontation, survival, or weapons.
"Thanks." It wasn't really the right thing to say, but I was feeling too self-conscious to know what was.
Turning away, I started into the villa. "Right wing," he said quietly as I started to go left. I turned mid-step and walked down a hall. The padding of bare feet behind me made me slow, and I twisted to see the female servant following me.
This is weird.
From an arena filled with monsters to this? I could see Leandra, or the other nymphs, squealing in delight to be handed a villa. But I was uncomfortable. Overwhelmed. 4 chambers lined this hallway, and a 5th was at the very end. The servant motioned to that one. I opened the double doors and gasped. 40-foot ceilings, a bed larger than any I'd seen, and a ceiling depicting the gods in gold and gems. Pale neutrals created a seamless line from floor to wall to ceiling, and the scent of jasmine was in the air. The servant padded to a door on one side, and I trailed, flabbergasted by the luxurious room. The bathroom consisted of a large shower, dressing and powder room, an antique-style heated bath the size of a small pool, waterfall and multiple sinks. White marble was everywhere, dotted with white faces and flowers.
Wow, I breathed.
I began to see why I needed a servant when I crossed to the shower. It was controlled by a touchscreen on the wall. The servant punched a few buttons. Instantly, overhead rain shower heads and jets lining both walls sprang to life. I knew before I set foot in it that it was going to be the most incredible experience yet. I stripped out of my clothing, slowly, my back aching and tight despite my reassurance to Cleon I was fine. I dropped the dirty clothing on a chair and stepped into heaven.
"Oh my gods!" I exclaimed, melting into the hot water.
I rested my hand against the wall and sighed deeply. Blood and dirt colored the water swirling at my feet, and I watched it, content to stay put for the rest of my life. Except, Cleon was waiting. He seemed young to be in charge of the world. I almost laughed at the thought, then closed my eyes and let the water stream down over my gritty face. With some reluctance and a silent promise to return later, I showered and left the most awesome place on the planet. A towel and slippers were left out for me. I dried off quickly and left the bathroom, looking around the bedroom for a dresser or something. "I'm Dr. Khan," said a pretty woman dressed in white scrubs. She'd set up the chaise at the windows overlooking the gardens as a triage station. "If you would take a seat?" I did so. She was quick, taking my vitals, then moving to stitch the wound at my back. I felt only the prick of the local anesthesia, and within 5 minutes, she began packing her bag.
"Thanks," I murmured. My numbed back was almost a relief. I was sore enough from fighting.
"My pleasure." Dr. Khan smiled and left. I stood and stretched. The servant stood beside another open door, this one with the light on. "Clothes?" I asked. She nodded. I went to the walk-in closet and stopped so quickly in the doorway she ran into me. It was a 2-story closet, with a wall of shoes and purses, a dressing area complete with couch, and every item of clothing color-coded. The rainbow of clothes stretched around the closet.
"This is ridiculous," I said, and then laughed so hard my back hurt. "These can't all be mine. No one needs this much clothing."
"They were tailored especially for you," the servant said. "Nico called in your measurements. It's taken 10 seamstresses 3 days to make these." I shook my head.
"I appreciate their efforts, but it's not like I can wear all of this. Where in Hades do I even start?"
"The Oracle wears traditional garb for her official duties. What's your favorite color?"
"Blue, I guess."
Still grinning, I watched her cross to the spiral stairwell in the center of the closet.
Tasia, you've been reassigned, came a soft voice. Kitchens.
The servant paused and then left the closet, replaced by none other than perfect, beautiful Leandra.
Leandra? I exclaimed and hugged her. But I thought you were placed in the Queen's Court.
Hush, Lyssa. You always were a tad slow. She shot me a look. With a quick glance out into the bedroom, she closed the closet door.
I'm here undercover.
You're a spy? I started to laugh again. This keeps getting crazier.
Shut up.
Leandra moved gracefully towards the clothing. I'm picking your clothes. I've seen how you dress.
Whatever.
I sat down on the couch. She went up to the second level and began pushing clothing aside.
Why does the Queen need a spy?
Because apparently none of them at the top trust one another.
Ah,
yeah, I've seen that. It's nothing like what I expected it to be.
What isn't?
The real world?
It's different than what I expected, too, Leandra said. But I think we were prepared for this better than you.
What do you mean?
The priests trained the rest of us in methods of subversion on the weekends, while you were hiding in the forest.
I thought you went to town to watch movies.
Nope. See how good we are? You never figured it out, she said with a smirk.
So you were trained to spy, and I was learning how to survive in the forest, I mused. Kind of jacked up, isn't it?
Very. But the priests knew what you were. We didn't find out until the place blew up and Sisa bulldozed the entire forest.
My smile faded. I hated recalling the circumstances of leaving the forest. I wanted to pretend it'd still be there when this crazy dream was over.
They groomed us to protect you and further our cause. Your own personal spy network in the most prominent families in the world.
Seriously?
I'm running it, so don't get any ideas.
She shot me a look.
The others are moving into position.
Why didn't you warn me about anything up till now? I complained.
Because we had no access to you.
She carried a blue-green dress when she descended the stairs and set it down on the table in the dressing area.
A dress? I grumbled. You're on the same level as the Queen. She only wears dresses. So do you.
It was weird to see even Leandra accepting all this. The nymphs made fun of me my whole life. If anyone was going to be more surprised than I was, I expected it to be her. But she appeared fine with circumstances I was having trouble swallowing.
Towel off, she told me. This will be like wrestling a pig into an oven.
Gee, thanks. I tugged the towel off and let her wrestle the dress into place. It was light and airy, layers of silk so sheer they were transparent. The bodice was wrapped in a gold rope that hugged my body and moved and stretched when I breathed.
This isn't bad.
I can still fight in it.
No fighting. This dress is worth a fortune, Leandra chided.
You never know when you'll run into a monster that shouldn't exist.
I saw you on television. You and the Sisa chief in the arena.
Her hands paused from tugging the layers straight.
You did really good, Lyssa. Heracles trained you well.
I didn't die, I agreed.
I played with the ruched portion over my breasts. The square neckline was low, but not indecent, and the gem mismatch had given me glowed just above the seam.
The thought of Adonis made my sad confusion return.
Have you heard from him?
Not directly. One of the girls heard he went underground. He might be waiting it out until Sisa isn't looking for him anymore.
Was he serious about helping me if I got stuck with Sisa?
Before my memories, I never would have entertained such a thought.
Do you know what's going on? For real? I asked quietly.
You're meant to return us to the old ways, according to the priests.
Is that really possible?
I met her gaze.
Yes, You're the Oracle, Lissa. She believed what she was saying. No one else can stand up to the gods.
But am I supposed to?
Her hands dropped.
I mean, they're the gods.
They're destroying the human world for material gain, she answered. Not all of them. The priest said some were good.
The gods created this world. They did their part.
Now they need to leave us alone, she reasoned. Artemis and the Titan Lelantos agree and have protected us for this reason.
Really?
Or is this the latest alliance in territorial gods? I challenged.
It's possible, I suppose.
We gazed at one another. I didn't have answers. I never really did. Leandra knew what we were taught, and I suspected both of us were going to learn more about the truth of the world before we understood how we were going to convert it to the old ways.
Sit down, I need to do your hair, she said.
Neither of us was satisfied with the discussion, but I obeyed. She primped, curled, dried, gelled, and gods knew what else to my hair, until it shone and the plump curls stayed in place. I admired her work in the mirror. I had always wanted to spend time on my hair like the nymphs did, but Heracles usually had other plans.
Now for shoes.
She was cheerful again. She went to the wall of shoes and selected delicate high heels. No way I'm wearing those, I said instantly. I can't fight monsters in heels.
You're going on a tour not to fight monsters.
No heels. She sighed noisily.
Fine.
Your fat feet would look funny in them anyway.
My feet aren't fat. I glanced down. How about these?
She held up strappy sandals with an inch heel. Okay. She dropped them near me. I slid them on. They were comfortable.
I'll carry a shawl and satchel for you.
You're going with me?
Yep.
I was relieved. I didn't realize how nice it was to be around a familiar face until I thought about leaving her here to tour with strangers.
Am I presentable?
I whirled, grinning at the layers of silk that swirled around my legs.
Until you speak.
Ignoring her, I left the closet.
You can't let anyone know we know one another, she warned me as I started towards the door.
I won't. She trailed me out of the bedroom. I marveled at skylights of the hallway. Natural light poured into the house from every angle. I wasn't certain I'd ever get used to living here, but I could admit secretly that I loved the idea of trying. Cleon waited in a sitting room near the foyer. He rose as I approached. He didn't acknowledge Leandra at all as she took up her station nearby.
Hard to believe you faced down a monster or two,
he said, gazing over me. Not fully at ease in the fancy dress, despite its comfort, I crossed my arms self-consciously. His gaze returned to my features, and he held out an arm towards the entrance. I began walking, and he joined me. Servants opened the doors for us to leave, and I paused outside the front door, beneath a marble canopy shielding the sidewalks of the compound from sun. A small entourage awaited us. It consisted of a man with a bottle of wine and two glasses, a woman bearing delicate hors d'oeuvres on a platter, Leandra, and four guards. It was almost sundown, and I was disappointed to realize that meant Adonis wouldn't be at the soiree. Not that I wanted to see him, but... ugh. The Supreme Magistrate and I were handed a glass of wine, and we began walking. The Supreme Compound houses the White House, where I work on a daily basis. The residences of the Supreme Magistrate and Priest, and the Silent Queen's Secondary Court. As we walked towards the Congress building, Cleon began to point out residences, temples, and official offices, describe the benefactors behind the various gardens and courtyards, whisper about the underground bunkers, and generally orient me towards the most exclusive and well-guarded compound in the world. At its center was a massive white temple to Zeus, surrounded by a dozen smaller temples dedicated to other gods. The wealth and beauty of such a place, designed after an ancient Greek city, left me speechless. Cleon's general knowledge was underscored by the pleasant charm of a servant fascinated with his world, rather than the boastfulness of a supreme magistrate. He, like Adonis, was nothing like what I expected, especially after meeting the acid-mouthed Nico. My fascination with this new world and the man beside me grew as wine lifted some of the dread that had been following me around for days now. We watched the sunset from the private, uppermost balcony in Zeus's temple. The sky glowed with different hues of orange, pink, and red. I was even more mesmerized by the reflection of those colors on the marble temples in the compound. Several people were out in the quiet sidewalks and walking across the greens. The scent of earth and flowers filled the air, combined with incense from the altars on the temple floor. It was quiet, calming. Closing my eyes, I leaned against the railing, unable to recall when I last felt this relaxed. It had been since I was in the forest. Perhaps it was the wine and my exhaustion, or the subtle personality of the charming man beside me. But I was enjoying the peace of a compound I knew to be a breeding ground for political dissension among the triumvirate. I suspected Cleon was the latest who wanted to manipulate me into doing something. But it was nice to take a breather. "You are enjoying it," Cleon observed, a warm note in his voice for the first time. He stood beside me on the balcony. "Yeah," I murmured. "I know it's not real. I wish it was. It's real enough to touch." My eyes cracked open, and I shifted my hip against the railing to gaze up at him. He was handsome in a way as subtle as his charm. Unlike Adonis, who had to have been chiseled by the gods themselves, Cleon had a quiet beauty. Symmetrical features, wide forehead and jaw, eyes that were well-spaced, and an aquiline nose. Nothing stood out as especially good-looking about his features, but nothing to take away from them either. His clothing was tailored and fit well, adding to the air of stateliness. Like the compound, he was outwardly flawless. "It's what's beneath the surface that bothers me," I said. "You are troubled by what you have learned since leaving the forest." "You could say that." "Nico is a brash man, but he is my best, and I trust him. He obeys without thought. I sent him there to protect you once word leaked out of what Caesar planned." "You? I thought the priests hired him." "The priests were naive to believe no one knew they were there. I knew. I didn't know what they were hiding, but I had a source providing me information. It wasn't hard to manipulate the situation, so Nico was hired, rather than another mercenary." "There it is." The conniving was starting to emerge. More secrets I was afraid to learn. More claims I'd never be able to verify. The moment one of these people opened up to me, or my memories shared new insight, I was tense. I clutched the railing, gazing up at Cleon, waiting for the other shoe to drop. "I've worried you." Cleon rested a hand on my arm. "No, I've been waiting for that, and worse. Your position is one of political maneuvering. There is much of that on this compound." "It's not my thing. Like, it's the farthest thing in the universe from my thing." "How can I make you comfortable talking to me?" "Give me a knife." Without dropping my gaze, he motioned one of the guards over and held out his hand. The guard removed a knife and sheath from around his thigh and gave it to him. Cleon handed it to me. Surprised by the gesture, I accepted it. "Thanks. I want you to know you can trust me on some level." I gripped the knife, and it helped ease some of my tension. My response to him wasn't going to be favorable. but I owed him some level of politeness after he handed me a knife.
I have to ask. I know you have a trial for me.
What is it?
I asked, and braced myself for the response.
I am to task you last, he replied. I made a deal with the queen for the privilege.
But honestly, I want only what is best for both men and gods.
That sounds fair.
Adonis was right about the unknown messing with someone's mind. What could a man this powerful task me to do? The Supreme Priest had wanted to use my powers for his own personal gain. Was it safe to assume everyone in power would do the same? I kept quiet and turned to face the sky once more. It was as I saw the last of the sun dip below the horizon that it hit me why this was so awkward. Cleon was the first person I'd ever met who treated me like an equal. He didn't talk down to me, didn't assume I was an idiot, didn't try to control, cage, or coerce me yet. It made me want to be less hot-headed and watch my tongue for once. To remain in a position where he thought of me the way he seemed to at the moment. I wanted him to think me his equal. Because no one ever had. It was gratifying to be considered such by someone at his level, and wanted to try to live up to the expectations of a stranger.
He really is a good politician.